Shine. Puccini Barras. Non mi sangue ma gay. Pad Paramahansa Paravidikacharya also Teda Satishi Shimad, His Divine Grace of Ayachatana, the Bhaktivananda Gosam, Srila Prabhupada Gijai, Eskan, Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Gijai, Anantakoti Vaishnav Vrinda Gijai, Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Gijai, Premsake, O Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda Sidwaita Gadadha Srivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Gijai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopikopadas Sayam Kunda Radha Kunda Gidigo Vran Gijai Vrindavanam Gijai Maturanam Gijai Jagannatha Sami Gijai Yamunamai Gijai Srimati Lassi Devi Gijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Gijai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is to Sri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Gijaya Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Pastaya Bhutale, Srimati Bhakta Vedanta Swamini Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Pacharne Nivashesha Srinivadi Paschacha, Deja Tarni. We're going to continue. Oh, let's read the translation first. My dear Lord, please be merciful to me, because who can be more merciful than your lordship within these three worlds? Your incarnation is just to reclaim the conditioned fallen souls, but I assure you, you will not find a more fallen soul than me. Therefore, my claim is first. My dear Lord Nityananda, you are always joyful in spiritual bliss. Since you always appear very happy, I have come to you because I am most unhappy. If you kindly put your glance over me, I may also become happy. My dear Advaita Prabhu, husband of Sita, you are so kind. Please be kind to me. If you are kind to me naturally, Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda will also be kind to me. I pray for the mercy of Sarupa Damodar, the six Goswamis, namely Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Bhatta Raghunath Goswami, Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Raghunath Das Goswami and Lokanath Prabhu Narottama Das Thakur Gijai. So we're continuing with our reading of the Krishna book. And we're at the point where a Akrura is taking Krishna out of Vrindavan. Akrura, of course, means not cruel, but he is the most krura or the most cruel person because he is taking Krishna out of Vrindavan. And as we mentioned last time, he got cursed by the gopis because he performed this most cruel act. And then he had to get in trouble with that whole Shyman Taka Jewel story. Okay, so Omagana Timiranda Shah. Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Okay, so let us continue sharing the screen. Let's see. Find it. It's one of the screens here. There we go. All right. Let us continue. And of course, this is these are Akrura's prayers to Krishna. My dear Lord, all living entities, including different grades of demigods. Whoops. Let's go down again. My dear Lord, all living entities, including different grades of demigods and different grades of overlords, kings, and other living entities, are resting in you as parts and parcels of the big unit. One cannot know you by experimental knowledge. One can simply understand your transcendental existence to be like the great ocean, in which different grades of living entities are included, or like the Udumbara fruit, out of which small mosquitoes come. My dear Lord, whatever eternal forms and incarnations you accept when you appear in this world are meant for relieving the living entities of their ignorance, illusion, and lamentation. All people, therefore, can appreciate the incarnations and pastimes of your Lord and eternally glorify your activities. No one can estimate how many forms and incarnations you have, nor can anyone estimate the number of universes that are existing within you. And actually, Prabhupada said, and the Bhagavatam says that Krishna has as many avatars or forms in this material world as there are waves in the ocean, which means unlimited. And there's also unlimited universes as described here. So Krishna is ananta. That means without an end. Let me therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto the fish incarnation, Matsya avatar, who appeared in the ocean of devastation, although your lordship is the cause of all causes. Let me offer my obeisances unto the Hayagriva incarnation, who killed the two demons, Madhu and Kaitava. So, that's why Krishna's called Madhusudana. Hayagriva means the horse-headed incarnation. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto you, who appeared as a gigantic tortoise. Wow, that's Kurma. That held up the great mountain Mandara and appeared as the boar that rescued the earth planet, which had fallen into the water of the Garbhadak. Let me just check the volume here. Make sure we're loud enough. Okay, that's better. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto your lordship, who appeared as Nrisingha Deva, to deliver all kinds of devotees from the fearful condition of material hold on a second, I got a window that just popped up. Sorry. For the fearful condition of the atheistic atrocities, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto you, who appeared as Vamanadeva and covered the three worlds simply by extending your lotus feet. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto you, who appeared as the Lord of the Bhrigus, in order to kill all the infidel administrators of the world. That's, of course, Parashuram. And let me offer my respectful obeisances unto you, who appeared as Lord Rama to kill demons like Ravan. You were worshipped by all devotees as the chief of the Raghu dynasty, Lord Ramchandra. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto you, who appeared as Lord Vasudev, Lord Sankarshan, Lord Pradyumna, and Lord Aniruddha. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto you, who appear as Lord Buddha, to bewilder the atheist and demoniac. And let me offer my respectful obeisances unto you, who appear as Kalki to chastise the so-called royal order, degraded to the abominable condition of the Malechas, who are below the jurisdiction of Vedic regulative principles. Of course, Kalki appears at the end of this Kali Yuga, and he basically wipes out everybody except for the devotees. My dear Lord, everyone within this material world is conditioned by your illusory energy. Under the impression of false identification and false possession, everyone is transmigrating from one body to another on the path of fruitive activities and their reactions. My dear Lord, I am no exception among these conditioned souls. I am falsely thinking myself happy in possessing my home, wife, children, estate, property, and friends. In this way, I am acting as if in a dreamland, because none of these are permanent. I am a fool to be always absorbed in thoughts of such things, accepting them as permanent truths. My dear Lord, due to my false identification, I have accepted as permanent everything which is non-permanent, such as this material body, which is not spiritual and is the source of all kinds of miserable conditions. Being bewildered by such concepts of life, I am always absorbed in thoughts of duality, and I have forgotten you, who are the reservoir of all transcendental pleasure. I am bereft of your transcendental association, being just like a foolish creature who leaves a water hole covered by water-nourished vegetation and goes in search of water in the desert. The conditioned souls want to quench their thirst, but they do not know where to find water. They give up the spot where there is actually a reservoir of water and run into the desert where there is no water. Of course, that's a metaphor. Comparing the association of Krishna with water and the material world with a desert. And we're looking for water in a desert, which is kind of stupid. My dear Lord, I am completely incapable of controlling my mind, which is now driven by the unbridled senses and is attracted by fruitive activities and their results. Therefore, my intelligence is very miserly. My dear Lord, your lotus feet cannot be appreciated by any person in the conditioned stage of material existence, but somehow or other I have come near your lotus feet, and I consider this to be your causeless mercy upon me. You can act in any way, because you are the supreme controller. I can thus understand that when a person becomes eligible to be delivered from the path of repeated birth and death, it is only by your causeless mercy that he comes nearer to your lotus feet and becomes attracted to your devotional service. Akrura fell down before the Lord and said, My dear Lord, your transcendental eternal form is full of knowledge. Simply by concentrating one's mind upon your form, one can understand in full knowledge everything that be, because you are the supreme original source of all knowledge. You are the supreme powerful, possessing all kinds of energies. You are the supreme Brahman and the supreme person, supreme controller and master of the material energies. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, because you are Vasudeva, the resting place of all creation. You are the all-pervading supreme personality of Godhead, and you are also the supreme soul residing in everyone's heart and giving direction to act. As Krishna says in the Gita, Mataksprityar Yanamaponamja, also Ishwara Sarvabhutanam Radesha Arjuna Tishtati, Brahmayan Savar Sarva Bhutane Yantra Rudani Maya. Now, my Lord, I am completely surrendered unto you. Please give me your protection. Thus ends Bhaktivedanta purport of the 40th chapter of Krishna Prayers by Akrura. So today we did 40b, sorry. And now we're going to start chapter 41. Krishna enters Mathura. This is a very interesting chapter, as our old chapters. While Akrura was offering his prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord disappeared from the water, because Akrura was taking his bath in the water, and he actually saw Krishna and Balaram, and actually Mahavishnu and Seshanag in the water, and he had previously left them on the chariot, so this actually stimulated his prayers that he saw that they were actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Exactly as an expert dramatic actor changes his dress and assumes his original feature. After the Vishnumurti disappeared, Krura got out of the water. Finishing the rest of his ritualistic performance, he went near the chariot of Balaram, and Krishna was struck with wonder. Krishna asked whether he had seen something wonderful within the water or in space. Akura said, "My dear Lord, all wonderful things that are happening within this world, either in the sky or in the water or on the land, are factually appearing in your universal form. So when I've seen you, what wonderful things have I not seen?" This statement confirms the Vedic version that one who knows Krishna knows everything, and that one who has seen Krishna has seen everything regardless of how wonderful a thing may be. Yasmin vigyate sarvamevam vigyatam bhavati. That's the Sanskrit. My dear Lord, Arjuna continued, "There cannot be anything more wonderful than your transcendental form. When I have seen your transcendental form, what is there left to see?" After saying this, Akura immediately started driving the chariot, and by the end of the day, they reached the precincts of Mathura. As they rode from Vrindavan to Mathura, all the passerby along the way who saw Krishna and Balaram could not help but look at them again and again. In the meantime, the other inhabitants of Vrindavan, headed by Nanda and Upananda, had already reached Mathura by going through the forest, and they were awaiting the arrival of Krishna and Balaram in the garden. Upon reaching the entrance to Mathura, Krishna and Balaram got down from the chariot and shook hands with Akura. It's like shaking hands, it was traditional. Krishna informed him, "You may go home now because we shall enter Mathura later along with our associates." Akura replied, "My dear Lord, I cannot go to Mathura alone, leaving you aside. I am your surrendered servant. Please do not try to avoid me. Please come along with me, with your elder brother and coward boyfriends, and sanctify my house. My dear Lord, if you come, my home will be sanctified by the dust of your lotus feet. The water emanating from the perspiration of your lotus feet, namely the Ganges, purifies everyone, including the forefathers, the fire god, and all other demigods. Bali Maharaj has become famous simply by washing your lotus feet, and he enjoyed all material opulences, and later on was elevated to the highest position of liberation. The Ganges water not only sanctifies the three worlds, but is carried on the head of Lord Shiva. The ancestors of Bhagiratha, sanctified by this water, achieved the heavenly planets, O Supreme Lord of Lords." Because Bhagiratha was the one who brought the Ganges down. He performed great austerities. Ganges agreed to go, but said, "You know, if there's problems if I come, I'll be so forceful, I am going to split the earth planet." So then Bhagirath got Lord Shiva to agree to catch the Ganges in his hair. And then he caught the Ganges in his hair, and he didn't let the Ganges go because the Ganges was proud, and eventually he let her go when Bhagirath prayed. And there was another objection that the Ganges had, and that second objection was that all the rascals would bathe in her. And Bhagirath answered that also all the great devotees would bathe in her, and that would keep her pure, because when someone bathes in the water, they dump off their contamination, karma, and everything like that. So you got to be really careful. So the Ganges came down, and then we have the Ganges today. O Master of the Universe, one can achieve piety simply by hearing about your transcendental pastimes, O Supreme Narayan, who are praised with select verses. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. On hearing this, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna replied, Akura, I shall surely come to your home with my elder brother Balaram, but only after killing all the demons who are envious of the Yadu dynasty. In this way I shall please all my relatives. Akura became a little disappointed by these words of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he could not disregard the order. He therefore entered Mathura and informed Kamsa about the arrival of Krishna, and then he entered his own home. After Akura's departure, Lord Krishna Balaram and the coward boys entered Mathura to see the city. They observed that the gate of Mathura was made of first-class marble, very well constructed, and that the doors were made of pure gold. There were gorgeous gardens and orchards all around, and the whole city was encircled by canals so that no enemy could enter very easily. They saw that all the crossroads were decorated with gold, and that there were copper and brass storehouses for stocking grain. And there were many rich men's houses, all appearing symmetrical, as if constructed by one engineer. The houses were decorated with costly jewels, and each and every house had nice compounds of trees bearing fruits and flowers. The corridors and verandas of the houses were decorated with silk cloth and embroidery work in jewels and pearls. In front of the balcony windows were pigeons and peacocks walking and cooing. All of the grain dealers' shops within the city were decorated with different kinds of flowers and garlands, newly grown grass, and pleasing flowers like narcissus and roses. The entrance doors of the houses were decorated with water pots filled with water. A mixture of water, yogurt, sandalwood pulp, and flowers was sprinkled all around the doors, which were also decorated with burning lamps of different sizes. Over all the doors were decorations of fresh mango leaves and silk festoons. When the news spread that Krishna, Balaram, and the coward boys were within the tourist city, all the inhabitants gathered, and the ladies and girls immediately went up to the roofs of their houses to see them. They had been awaiting the arrival of Krishna and Balaram with great anxiety, and in their extreme eagerness to see Krishna and Balaram, the ladies did not dress themselves very properly. Some of them placed their clothes in the wrong place. Some of them anointed their eyes on one side only, and some wore ankle bells only on one leg or wore only one earring. So they were in complete ecstasy. So they became detached from all external reality because of their love for Krishna and haste to see Krishna. Thus in great haste, not even decorated properly, they went to see Krishna from the roofs. Some of them had been taking their lunch, but as soon as they heard that Krishna and Balaram were in the city, they left their eating and ran to the roofs. Some of them were in the bathroom taking their baths, but without properly finishing their baths, they went to see Krishna and Balaram. Some were engaged in feeding their children breast milk, but they put their babies aside and went to see Krishna and Balaram. Passing by very slowly and smiling, Lord Krishna immediately stole their hearts. He was the husband of the goddess of fortune, passed through the street like an elephant. For a very long time, the women of Mathura had heard about Krishna and Balaram and their uncommon characteristics, and they were very much attracted and eager to see them. Now, when they actually saw Krishna and Balaram passing on the street and saw them sweetly smiling, the ladies' joy reached the point of ecstasy. When they actually saw them with their eyes, they took Krishna and Balaram within their hearts and began to embrace them to their fullest desire. Their bodily hairs stood up in ecstasy. They had heard of Krishna, but they had never seen him, and now their longing was relieved. After going up on the roofs of the palaces to Mathura, the ladies, their faces joyful, began to shower flowers upon Krishna and Balaram. When the brothers were passing through the streets, all the brahmanas in the neighborhood went out with sandal water and flowers and respectfully welcomed them to the city. All the residents of Mathura began to talk among themselves about the elevated and pious activities of the people in Vrindavan. The residents of Mathura were surprised at the pious activities the coward men in Vrindavan must have performed in their previous lives to be able to see Krishna and Balaram daily as coward boys. While Krishna and Balaram were passing in this way, they saw a washerman and dyer of clothing. Krishna was pleased to ask him for some nice clothing. He also promised that if the washerman would deliver the nicest dyed cloth to him, the washerman would become very happy and all good fortune would be his. Krishna was not a beggar, nor was he in need of clothing, but by this request, he indicated that everyone should be ready to offer Krishna whatever he wants. Very important phrase. Whatever Krishna wants, that's pure devotional service. That is the meaning of Krishna consciousness. Unfortunately, this washerman was a servant of Kamsa and therefore could not appreciate the demand of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the effect of bad association. He could have immediately delivered the clothing to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who promised him all good fortune, but being a servant of Kamsa, the sinful demon could not accept the offer. Instead of being pleased, he was very angry and refused the Lord's request, saying, "How is it that you are asking for clothing which is meant for the king?" The washerman then began to instruct Krishna and Balaram, "My dear boys, in the future, don't be so impudent as to ask for things which belong to the king. Otherwise, you will be punished by the government men. They will arrest you and punish you, and you will be in difficulty. I have practical experience of this fact. anyone who unlawfully wants to use the king's property is very severely punished. On hearing this, Lord Krishna, the son of Devaki, became very angry at the Vajra, and striking him with the upper portion of his hand, he separated a man's head from the body. Ooh. The washerman fell down dead on the ground. In this way, Lord Krishna confirmed the statement of the Brahma Sanhita that every limb of his body is capable of doing anything he likes. Without a sword, but simply with his hand, he cut off the head of the washerman. This is proof that the Supreme Lord is omnipotent. If he wants to do something, he can do it without extraneous help. And of course, that's Angani Yasha Shakalindriyadri Timanti. That the Supreme Lord can do anything with any of his senses, active senses or perceptive senses, that any of the other senses can do. So he can do anything. I mean, there's no limitation. It's not only through his senses or interchangeable senses, but because he has a spiritual body, because he's unlimited, because he has unlimited power, and unlimited knowledge and unlimited everything. Basically, he can do anything he wants, in any way that he wants, to anyone he wants, at any time he wants. How about that? And he can get away with it. After this ghastly incident, and that's, of course, the humor of ghastliness, the employees of the washerman immediately dispersed, leaving the clothing. Krishna and Balaram took possession of it and dressed according to their choice. The rest of the clothes were offered to the coward boys, who also used them as they desired. What they did not use remained there. Krishna, Balaram, and the boys then proceeded along the main road. In the meantime, a devotee tailor took the opportunity of service and prepared some nice clothes from the cloth for Krishna and Balaram. Thus being very nicely attired, Krishna and Balaram looked like elephants dressed with colored clothing on a full moon day or the dark moon day. Krishna was very much pleased with the tailor and gave him the benediction of Sarupya Mukti, which means that after leaving his body, he would be liberated and would attain a four-handed body exactly like that of Narayan and Vaikuntha planets. That's called Sarupya. Salokya, of course, means living on the same planet as Krishna. Sarshti means having the same opulences as Krishna. Samipya, associating with Krishna, and the one the devotees don't accept is Sayuja, which means what? Merging into the existence of the Lord. Krishna also granted him that as long as he would live, he would earn sufficient opulence to be able to enjoy sense gratification. And of course, because he was a pure devotee, he didn't really want sense gratification. He offered everything to Krishna throughout his whole life. By this incident, Krishna proved that those who are Krishna-conscious devotees will not be lacking material enjoyment of sense gratification. They will have sufficient opportunity for such things, but after leaving this body, they will be allowed to enter the spiritual planets of Vaikuntha Loka or Krishna Loka, Goloka Vrindavan. Now, for a devotee, they can really enjoy, and they can be satisfied. As Krishna says in the Gita, Tushanti cha ramanti cha. Machita mankata prana paryantascha parasparam katyantascha mam nichabukta vijasa aprashate. That the devotee, machita mankata, they're enlivening one another and conversing about Krishna. And because of that, they're deriving great satisfaction and bliss. But someone who tries to simply satisfy his senses with material sense gratification, he will never be satisfied. And Bhagavad Gita also says that. Avritam gyanam etena gyanino nichavayana kama rupena kontiya dushparena analena cha. Then his attempts, as we were reading this morning in Bhagavatam class, his attempts will be like throwing petrol or gasoline on a fire in order to extinguish the fire. And it doesn't work like that. It further inflames the fire. After dressing nicely, Krishna and Balaram went to a florist of the name Sudama. Now, this is a different Sudama than Sudama Brahman, and it's a different Sudama than the Sudama who was actually one of Krishna's friends in Vrindavan. So many devotees have the name Sudama. As soon as they reached the precinct of his house, the florist immediately came out and with great devotion fell down on his face to offer his respectful obeisances. He offered a nice seat to Krishna and Balaram and asked his assistant to bring out flowers, betel nuts, and pulp of chandan. The florist greatly satisfied the Lord. The florist very humbly and submissively offered his prayers to the Lord, saying, "My dear Lord, because you have come to my place, I think all my forefathers and all my worshipful superiors are pleased and delivered. My dear Lord, you are the supreme cause of all causes of this cosmic manifestation. But for the benefit of the residents of this earthly planet, you have appeared with your plenary portion," that's Balaram, "to give protection to your devotees and annihilate the demons. You are equally disposed as the friend of all living entities. You are the super soul, and you do not discriminate between friend and enemy." So you can imagine how educated, intelligent the florists were. And of course the gopis, they understood the philosophy backwards and forwards. The florists understood. Anyone at that time who was pious and a devotee was possessed of full knowledge. "Yet you are pleased to give your devotees the special result of their devotional activities. My Lord, I am praying that you please tell me whatever you wish me to do, because I am your eternal servant. If you would order me to do something, it would be a great favor to me." The florist Sudama was greatly pleased within his heart by seeing Krishna and Balaram in his place. And thus, as his choicest desire, he made two exquisite garlands of various flowers and presented them to the Lord. Krishna and Balaram were very much pleased with his sincere service, and Krishna offered the florist his salutation and benedictions, which he is always prepared to bestow upon the surrendered souls. When the florist was offered benedictions, he begged from the Lord that he might remain his eternal servant in devotional service, and by such service do good to all living creatures. By this, it is clear that a devotee of the Lord in Krishna consciousness should not be satisfied simply by his own advancement in devotional service. He must be willing to work for the welfare of all others. Prabhupada says, all others. This example was followed by the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. It is therefore stated in a prayer about them, and this is Srinivasacharya's prayers, Lokanam Itakarno Tri Bhuvane, that they work for the benefit, they are merciful to all living entities. Vaishnavas or devotees of the Lord are not selfish. Whatever benefits they derive from the Supreme Personality of Godhead as benedictions, they want to distribute to all other persons. That is the greatest of all humanitarian activities. Being satisfied with the florist, Lord Krishna not only gave him whatever benedictions he wanted, but over and above that, he offered him all material opulences, family prosperity, a long duration of life, and whatever else his heart desired within the material world. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 41st chapter of Krishna. Krishna enters Mathura. So we did 41. And we can start 42. The breaking of the bow in the sacrificial arena. So the first story is the story of Kubja. After leaving the florist's place, Krishna and Balaram saw a hunchback young woman carrying a dish of sandalwood pulp through the streets. Since Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure, he wanted to make all his companions joyous by cutting a joke with the hunchback woman. Krishna addressed her, "O tall young woman, who are you?" Now, try to understand, Krishna was not making fun of her. He was testing her, not making fun of her. "Tell me, for whom," because Krishna is never cruel, "tell me, for whom are you carrying this sandalwood pulp in your hand? I think you should offer this sandalwood pulp to me. And if you do so, I am sure you will be fortunate." Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he knew everything about the hunchback. By his inquiry, he indicated that there was no use in serving a demon. She would do better to serve Krishna and Balaram and get an immediate result of the service. Now, here's the background story. Let's turn back the clock, or several years, millions of years, and go to the pastimes of Lord Ramchandra. And when Ram and Sita and Lakshman were in the forest, this Rakshasini, Surpanaka, came and proposed to Ram. All right, it's pretty heavy. She proposed to Ram, and it's described she had long nails, but she was able to change the shape of her body so she looked quite beautiful. And so she went to Ram and said, Ram, I must have you. And Ram said, but I have my wife here. This will be trouble. So my brother doesn't have his wife here. I'm sure he'll be happy to accept you. So she went to Lakshman and said, Lakshman. And Lakshman said, you know, if you get married to me, you'll simply be a servant of Ram and Sita. And so she goes back to Ram. And at this point, she gets so angry that she's being dealt with in such a way, you know, teased, that she pulls out her claws and her teeth come out, you know, like a real Rakshasini, and she gets ready to attack Sita Devi. So I'm going to devour her. And so then Lakshman comes up and he cuts off her nose and ears and she runs away. So, if you hadn't figured it out by now, that Surpanaka in her next life, of course, first she complained to Ravana and instigated Ravana to kidnap Sita Devi, but that's the Ramayana story, which we're not going to talk about right now. So in her next life, because she had that attraction to Krishna, in a not completely spiritual way, it's conjugal. I'm just like in the material world, you have conjugal. But her attraction was mixed. She was lusty, just to tell you the truth. And because of that, in her next life, she took birth as this Kubja, the hunchback lady in Mathura. So let's hear what happens with Kubja. The woman replied to Krishna, my dear Shyamashundara, dear beautiful dark boy, you may know that I'm engaged as a maidservant of Kangsa. I'm supplying a pulp of sandalwood daily. The king is very much pleased with me for supplying this nice thing, but now I see there is no one who can better be served by this pulp of sandalwood than your two brothers. Being captivated by the beautiful features of Krishna and Balaram, their talking, their smiling, their glancing, and their other activities, the hunchback woman began to smear all the pulp of sandalwood over their bodies with great satisfaction and devotion. The two transcendental brothers, Krishna and Balaram, were naturally beautiful and had beautiful complexions. And they were nicely dressed in colorful garments. The upper portions of their bodies were already very attractive, and when the hunchback woman smeared their bodies with sandalwood pulp, they looked even more beautiful. Krishna was very much pleased by this service, and he began to consider how to reward her. In other words, in order to draw the attention of the Lord, the Krishna-conscious devotee has to serve him with great love and devotion. Krishna cannot be pleased by any action other than transcendental loving service unto him. Thinking like this, Lord Krishna pressed the feet of the hunchback woman with his toes and capturing her cheeks with his fingers, gave her a jerk in order to make her straight. At once, the hunchback woman became a beautiful straight girl with broad hips, thin waist, and very nice wall-shaped breasts. Since Krishna was pleased with the service of the hunchback woman, since she was touched by Krishna's hands, she became the most beautiful girl among women. This incident shows that by serving Krishna, the devotee immediately becomes elevated to the most exalted position in all respects. Devotional service is so potent that anyone who takes to it becomes qualified with all godly qualities. Krishna was attracted to the hunchback woman not for her beauty but for her service. As soon as she rendered service, she immediately became the most beautiful woman. A Krishna-conscious person does not have to be qualified or beautiful. After becoming Krishna-conscious and rendering service unto Krishna, he becomes very much qualified and beautiful. The problem is sometimes comment that before coming to Krishna-consciousness, the devotees, I'm not talking about myself, but the devotees, beauty was there, but it was covered. Because the soul naturally has beauty. I mean, it's effulgent. But when someone comes to Krishna consciousness, the covering becomes eradicated, Cheto Darpana Marjanam, Bhava Mahat Bhagni Nirvapanam, and then one's actual beauty becomes manifest. And therefore, Prabhupada would sometimes comment that when people would see the devotees, they would ask them, what country do you come from? Even though obviously they were Americans and they had all American features externally. But still, because they started to glow and they looked extremely attractive, therefore, people asked that question, you know, what country are you from? Oh, America. Oh, pretty nice. Where did you get such a beautiful body? When a woman was turned by Krishna's favor into an exquisitely beautiful young girl, she naturally felt very much obliged to Krishna, and she was also attracted by his beauty. Without hesitation, she caught the rear part of his cloth and began to pull it. Ooh! It's something that should not be done in public, or with anyone, unless... with anyone! I mean, even in married life, one shouldn't be extremely lusty like that. She smiled flirtatiously and admitted that she was agitated by lust and desires. So it was like mixed. It wasn't pure love at that point. I mean, later on, we'll read that Krishna did visit her in her home and accepted her hospitality. She forgot that she was on the street and before the elder brother of Krishna and his friends. She frankly proposed to Krishna, "My dear Hurrible, I cannot leave you in this way. You must come to my place. I'm already very much attracted to your beauty, so I must receive you very well, and since you are the best among males, you must also be kind upon me." In plain words, she proposed that Krishna come to her home and satisfy her lusty desires. Krishna, of course, felt a little bit embarrassed in front of his elder brother Balaram, but he knew that the girl was simple and attractive. Therefore, he simply smiled at her words, looking toward his coward boyfriends. He replied to the girl, "My dear, beautiful girl, I am very much pleased by your invitation, and I must come to your home after finishing my other business here. A beautiful girl such as you is the only means of solace for persons like us who are away from home and not married. Certainly, a suitable girlfriend like you can give us relief from all kinds of mental agitation." Of course, Krishna didn't have any mental agitation. But Krishna was just being very kind with her and reciprocating, even with her material desires. Interesting. And therefore, Krishna later on visited her and not only accepted her hospitality, but also got rid of all of her material desires, and she became a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna satisfied the girl in this way with sweet words. Leaving her there, he proceeded down the street of the marketplace, where the citizens were preparing to receive him with various kinds of presentations, especially betel nuts, flowers, and sandalwood pulp. I'll read one more paragraph. The mercantile men in the market worshipped Krishna and Balaram with great respect. When Krishna was passing through the street, all the women of the surrounding houses came to see him, and some of the younger ones almost fainted, being captivated by his beauty. Their hair and tight clothing loosened, and they forgot where they were standing. So we're going to end here. And we'll continue. This is 42A. So we did 40B, 41, and 42A. So let's stop sharing. And allow you to unmute yourselves. Okay. Oh, there's a question in the chat window. I often hear how doubts are an obstacle in spiritual life. I wonder what those doubts are. Woo! Sometimes devotees question about some important things like spiritual life, and this seems like doubts. But maybe that's just an important step they're making in their spiritual life. How can we know whether we have dangerous doubts or just expected questions? Well, generally, if you doubt a pure devotee, that's actually the most dangerous doubt. If someone's actually a pure devotee, of course, you shouldn't be blind and accept someone who's not a pure devotee as a pure devotee, but let's say Prabhupada. If you doubt in Prabhupada's position, at the same time, one has to apply, this gets a little technical, one has to apply hermeneutics to understand what is Prabhupada's position and when Prabhupada is speaking from the absolute platform and when Prabhupada is speaking from the relative platform. Because Prabhupada is a person, he has his own likes and dislikes. It's not that if you like a different type of vegetable than Prabhupada likes, that you have doubts. I probably like potatoes. Can't say the potatoes are one of my favorite. I have other vegetables, broccoli. I don't really have too much memory of Prabhupada eating broccoli. I'm sure he did once or twice. So one has to really understand Prabhupada's position. That's why it's important to understand how to understand Shastra. What does it mean, understand? How to understand? That means to understand hermeneutics. Hermeneutics means how do you understand what something is said, whether it's metaphorical, what are the purposes, whether it's a relative statement, whether it's an absolute statement. I mean, so it's really, really important to, when approaching Shastra, then doubts also mean that one has, here's another point, doubts also mean that one has more trust in their own ability to discriminate, in their own perceptive ability, than they do in Shastra or Krishna's words or the words of the pure devotee. Like I said, but one has to be careful about that because sometimes the pure devotee has his own opinion, which is his personal opinion. He's a person. Just like Krishna wears a yellow dhoti. Not that you should wear a yellow dhoti. Balaram wears a blue dhoti. So we don't imitate. We don't imitate Balaram and Krishna. So a yellow dhoti is better than a blue dhoti, or blue dhoti is better than a yellow dhoti, or potatoes are better than broccoli. These are all relative truths. And one has to be able to discriminate. That's why the science of hermeneutics is very important, or else you get a lot of doubts. So I hope that's important. So basically, doubts, they're dangerous when we actually start to minimize, criticize, or take Krishna's statements as being relative, relative in the sense of wrong. Relative statements are just relative statements. They're not wrong or right. So, I mean, that's a little complicated. Okay. So, I hope that answers some of the questions. So here's a, Hare Krishna Guru, please accept my humble obeisances. What is the difference between a Shiksha Guru and Diksha Guru? A Shiksha Guru gives you relevant instructions, guidance in Krishna consciousness, and a Diksha Guru gives you the mantra. There's the first initiation, Hare Krishna mantra. There's the Gayatri initiation. And so oftentimes, the Shiksha and Diksha Guru are the same person. Like with Prabhupada, Prabhupada is basically everyone's Shiksha Guru. You can have many Shiksha Gurus, but you can only have one Diksha Guru. I mean, you're not supposed to get the mantra twice from different persons. I mean, like there's that story that Gadadhar Pandit Goswami was in Jagannath Puri with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he said, "I'd like to hear the mantra from you." And Lord Chaitanya said, "That's offensive, basically," because Gadadhar Pandit Goswami had gotten his initiation from Pundarik Vidyanidhi. So that's the difference between a Shiksha Guru and a Diksha Guru. We can have many, 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 many Shiksha Gurus. Some of them may be absolute, that we accept absolutely, and some of them we can just take relevant information from them, or relative guidance under certain circumstances and not under all circumstances. There's just different circumstances, just different circumstances and different guidance and instructions. So anyway, one has to have the discrimination and accepting the guru is absolute. One has to see if the person is actually on the spiritual platform. Samitpani Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam, whether Shiksha Guru or Diksha Guru, they have to be Samitpani, humble and servant of their spiritual master. Shrotriyam, having heard nicely from their spiritual master, and Brahmanishtam, not falling down. I think, well, Krishna Priya had her hand up, and then she put it down, so.
I just need to do
this. Okay. So, what's up?
Yeah, good. Just a quick question on Canto 5, the hermeneutics on Canto 5, description of the universe. How do we understand? Is it a relative truth or absolute truth?
The description of the universe. Yeah, that can get really bewildering, can it? Yeah. I mean, so there's different ways to understand it. One is that one can understand that Krishna's dealing with different dimensional reality, which we're not privy to. There's things happening on different dimensions. Or one can understand that Krishna's presenting things, or the Bhagavatam, sorry, is presenting things in a teleological way for a particular purpose, or a pedantic way. In other words, to teach you something, and things can be taken metaphorically. So there's many different ways that devotees approach these incredulous descriptions in the fifth canto. And so you have to basically use hermeneutics to decide, as long as your interpretation does not conflict with the Siddhanta of Krishna consciousness. I mean, you'll find different acharyas will give different purports or interpretations of different descriptions, especially when the material world is being described. There's different ways of looking at the material world. I mean, there may be like 1,000 different true ways of looking at the material world from different perspectives. Like I said, there's a perspective of teleology, there's a perspective of ontology, that means the nature of something, the purpose. Teleology is purpose, of course. There's all sorts of different ways of looking at things. And we find in the acharyas, Bhaktivinoda Thakura would sometimes do that with some of the descriptions of the hellish punishments in the fifth canto, in addition to the descriptions of the planetary system. So, anyway, the main thing is don't deviate from Siddhanta. And, you know, many stories in the Bhagavatam are metaphorical, too. Like the Paranjana story is definitely metaphorical. And sometimes you may think that there's a little bit of, exaggeration, hyperbole is maybe the word, where it says that Chitraketu had like 10 million wives. I mean, that's the population of North Carolina. So, you know, sometimes you'll say, even in this world, like you're talking about someone who has, let's say, okay, if one of my godbrothers has, let's say, 50,000 disciples, and there is one or two that have that, maybe one, I will say sometimes, he has millions of disciples. So there's, you know, hyperbole in discussions too. So that takes, you know, the association of devotees sitting down and talking about things, trying to understand things. And definitely that occurs when there's a conflict with observable reality. You know, of course, observable reality is just observable reality. It's not reality. It's just like what you observe. And, you know, like two people can see the same thing and think it's completely different. One person, you know, rope, a snake, a typical example. So it requires mature association and discussion, especially when there is some apparent conflict between prachaksha, what you observe, and what the Shastra says. So I hope that, I mean, obviously it didn't answer all your questions, but it may give you some tools if you think about it. Okay, Hrishikesh?
Thank you, Gurudev. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it gives you some tools to avoid having doubts. Okay, that's it. That's all we have time for tonight. Thank you very much. This is very wonderful, being able to read Krishna book like this with all of you. It's just like, really brings me back to life. Not that I'm dead, but it brings me back to life and makes me happy to hear about Krishna. Especially these pastimes of Krishna entering Mathura are very instructive. Working with a washerman, with Kubja, with a cloth merchant, all these things like that. Just very, very instructive. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki.